You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and we are here with Emmore, of course. Emmore, what's going on?
Hello, the time change is kicking my ass.
Emmore, are you high? You
Yeah.
like paused. You are?
No. I am
You,
not
you,
on, I'm on birth control, but that's the only drug I'm taking.
Well, that doesn't make you high. Well, maybe it does. But I mean, it just shows what I know about women's health. Maybe it does. At any rate, listen, we're going to play a song and we're going to be right back. This is kind of the hottest new track of the month. This is Playlist and we'll be right back. Oh, Playlist by Teens in Trouble. We'll be right back. And we're here with Lizzie Killian of Teens in Trouble. Lizzie and Killian, how are you doing? Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Definitely a pleasure to have you on. The listeners probably know, but Lizzie is, or is Lizzie, are you Teens in Trouble or are you in Teens in Trouble? What's the deal?
It's complicated, I guess. I am Teens in Trouble. I started it as my solo project back in 2015. But it's somehow evolved into this band. So I feel like I'm also in it.
Well, actually, we're already getting off track, but that's fine. Em and I have had this discussion many times on the podcast. I always feel that usually, not always, but the vast majority of times, the best bands are dictatorships. If you look at Danzig, he says what's going to happen, and that's why Danzig friggin' rules. If you look at, The Clash, Joe and Paul are kind of the dictators. Not Paul, Joe and Mick. Paul's in there, and Topper doesn't really get a say. If you look at, Judas Priest, Rob Halford, and Glenn Tipton, they're the dictators. You know what I mean? There's only a few bands that aren't dictatorships that work well. Chumbawamba is pretty much the only one I can think of that isn't a dictatorship and worked well. Lizzie, what's your opinion on bands? Is dictatorship the best way, or collective, or democracy, but one person gets a few more votes than the other? What's your perspective? It has to work in Teens in Trouble. You just walk in and say, listen, Mike, this is what you're going to do, and you better freaking do it. If the listeners don't know, Mike Huguenor is also in Teens in Trouble. Mike Huguenor, of course, of Hard Girls, but more importantly, of Classics of Love, as well as, was he in Paradon, or is that Morgan? I always forget.
I think that's just Morgan, maybe.
Maybe, I think you're right. So anyways, Lizzie,
yeah.
How does Teens in Trouble work? Is it a dictatorship? Or, and then I'm gonna let you answer, is it a faux dictatorship where the dictator acts like it's a democracy, but in reality it's a dictatorship, which is really the best way for a band to work? Go ahead,
Maybe
please, I'm
a
sorry.
little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, but I definitely do run the show. This is the first time I've run a band this way, I suppose. I've been in a ton of other bands before, and it's always been sort of either more collaborative or someone else was leading the charge. When I started Teens in Trouble, it was more for me to explore my own songwriting style after being in a bunch of punk bands for a long time. And, all I knew really was like yelling haze and playing power chords. And so this Teens in Trouble was like sort of my room to explore different things. And then fast forward to 2022 when we put out the debut EP, I started working with a bunch of different people in the studio, including Mike Huguenor, who I've known since I was in high school, Randy Moore, who's in like a million bands, as you probably know, and Henry Chadwick, who played drums. And it's been really cool to just sort of have a say in everything. And initially, I wrote all the songs on acoustic guitar and just had it was acoustic guitar and vocals on my voice memos, and I worked with Randy to flesh them out. And then when we got in the studio together, we recorded everything, but I basically had final say on everything. And there'd be times where I would give Huguenor some direction, but I feel like everyone's been pretty much on the same page in terms of like the kinds of things we like. And the thing I like about working with these people, even if I am leading the charge, is they'll come up with ideas that maybe I wouldn't have thought of myself. So I think just having all those different people give their input has been helping shape the sound.
I actually didn't even mention it. I should mention off the back. So the new Teens in Trouble record is out the 29th of March. So like 2 weeks. It's real rad. Or at least I've heard three tracks. It's super rad. Like I said, I super love playlists and I love the video too. It's called What's Mine. That's out via Asian Man Records. Lizzie, I got so much I want to talk about. We're just gonna get to some of it, and we're not gonna get to all of it because we could be talking for 2 hours. First of all, Mike Park. Everyone says Mike Park is like the nicest guy. Oh, he's such a contributor to the scene. And Mike Park is a nice guy. He is a contributor to the scene. But people never, ever, ever mention Evil Mike. Mike has some anger in him, which he always tries to hide and doesn't want people to know about. I like Angry Mike because Angry Mike often has some good points. And I think Mike could be equally a force of destruction as he could be positive light. And I think he could use his vengeance to better the music society. Who is Mike Park to you? Do you see Angry Mike ever, or do you always get Nice Mike on the cover of San Jose Weekly that says, I'm just here to support the scene, instead of Vengeance Mike, who likes to see ruination upon select individuals?
I've only seen Evil Mike on social media. So in person, he's usually pretty nice. The times that he's gotten like mad at me is if he finds out that I'm spending too much money on fast food or something. Like, he got mad at me one time for not using the McDonald's app to get a discount on double or like McDoubles, I think to save like a couple bucks or something like that. I was like, I don't want to have like another app on my phone. And like, yeah, he just it's kind of funny the things he'll get mad about.
So who is Mike Park to you?
He's nice, Mike. Is that the question?
Oh,
Are
I
you
think John
frozen?
froze. Yeah.
I
What were you trying to order? Just
was getting like the McChicken sandwich and a Coke. No fries. And I think that would have also upset him because if you don't get the combo, then you're not saving money. But I don't want to, sometimes I just don't want all of the
just
food.
want select things. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
not
Yeah, it's
like,
like when they ask if you want like a, the combo with a medium Coke, but then like the workers will shame me for like getting the smaller Coke because it's not any cheaper. But it's like, I don't want 16 ounces of
Yeah, it's like a bucket versus
Yeah.
like a water bottle.
It's like I'll feel worse wasting it. I'm sure they waste a lot, but
You can do your part to help.
Yeah.
I don't want to blow too much smoke up Lizzie's chimney, but I super love this track playlist. The song, I'm paraphrasing. I don't know the exactly, but the lyrics are like, I want to know what songs you listen to. I want to know what songs you like, or something like that. Lizzie, how much can you re really tell about a person by the media and music they consume? And actually, I'm going to draw. Well, actually, go ahead and give the answer, and then I'm going to give a counterpoint. But go ahead. So how much can you tell about a person from the media and music they consume?
That's complicated. I feel like you could get a glimpse of like a person from some of their tastes. I mean, the way that I see it and how I wrote the song is I wrote it about when my now husband and I first met, and he made me a playlist when we first got together, and it was just sort of like it felt very special and personalized, like, oh, he's like trying to tell me something in like these songs. But I don't know, maybe that's reading too much into it. But it was also cool just to, there it was a lot of different things that I haven't listened to before. There was like some Boards of Canada in there, Sleeping States, a few others. But yeah, it just makes you feel like closer to that person, like, oh, this is the kind of stuff they like, and you're trying to find like little messages in those songs. But it's not just like with like romantic partners. Even when friends share music with me, it's always really cool to see, songs they put together or songs that resonate with them. And maybe they might be songs that you heard before, but now you hear it in a different light. So I always think that's pretty cool.
I'm always really interested in that topic because like drunk college bros that like to fight, and invariably they love Dave Matthews, which is like this calm, boring music. But here they are getting fight and date raping and doing all these horrible things, right? Similarly, if we look at like Ben Folds, I like Ben Folds. He's got all these songs like Baby, You Were the Only One, I'm the Luckiest, all that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, Ben Folds has been divorced 5 times. He got divorced from his first wife to his second, who was a yo no, I'm sorry. He got divorced from his second wife to his third because he was cheating on his second wife with his yoga instructor. Then he got divorced from his third wife for his fourth wife, who was a different yoga instructor, which I think is hilarious. Me
Wow.
similar, me similar, and I'm not trying to destroy Ben Folds' image, but I similarly, if we look at Brian Wilson, the all-time romantic songwriter, Brian Wilson, wouldn't it be nice? Let's Go to Heaven in My Car. All these wonderful Brian Wilson love songs. Meanwhile, the guy is a complete maniac that can't have any interaction with human beings and has been divorced like 4 times. So I'm always interested in that topic because it seems as though the people that write the songs that strike the chords with the widest swath of humanity are often barely human themselves. Like they're like maniacs or weirdos. You know what I mean? So how much can you really tell about someone from the media they consume or the media they write? So like for you, when you write a song, is that you speaking or is that, oh, actually I'll give you one more example and then I'll let you talk. This is a great example. Lizzie's bandmate, Mike Huguenot, used to be in the Hargroves. I mean, he was in the Hargroves, but also Classics of Love. Lead singer of Classics of Love is Jesse Michaels. Jesse Michaels, through Asian Man Records, just re-released the first Kamen Rider record. They did an awesome job. The first Kamen Rider record has a number of love songs. In the liner notes to the reissue, Jesse Michaels says, there's a bunch of love songs in here, but I've never, at the time, I had never experienced love or that kind of connection whatsoever. And this is me guessing what that kind of connection is. And here it is resonating with people quite deeply when it's some guy just guessing what love is, if you will. How much of you is true in your songs, and how much of it is a masquerade?
I feel like I can't not write sort of autobiographical songs. A lot of the songs are from my experiences, and I think a lot of the album, like this full-length album that's coming out, like half the songs are about time, And like my obsession with time and how like I either waste it or realize that I'm on autopilot, which is the name of one of the songs on there. But it did make me think about sort of the volume of songs about time in the in one album. But I figure like, you know, there are whole albums about love and like full of love songs. So why not have a full album or at least close to a full album about time? But yeah, there's like You Don't Want to Mess with Me is about you know my experience getting into a new relationship and sort of being guarded from a previous relationship, so sort of like treading that lightly and but also warning the person like you don't want to mess with me. Playlist we talked about a little bit, but that yeah, so that's also based on an actual playlist that I received and sort of my experiences around that. And It's Up to Me, that's one of the time songs, and just how like time will go by and I feel like all these things that I have to do keep piling up and I want to get them done, but the only way to really get them done is like if I do it myself, like it's not just going to like fix itself, or like any issues or problems I might have won't fix themselves.
You mentioned a lot about time, and the older you get, the quicker time goes, which is everyone says is true, and it's totally true. And so actually, there's a couple questions there. First of all, Lizzie, is there such a thing as wasted time? Because on one hand, you could say, you know, relaxing and not doing anything and not being productive is a waste of time. But on the other hand, if you enjoyed relaxing and doing nothing, then you use the time well. But on the other hand, if all you do is relax, you don't really accomplish anything. But on the other hand, if you're always trying to accomplish something, then you're never really enjoying what you've accomplished. So what's your perspective? Is there such a thing as wasted time? Because my answer is yes, there actually is definitely a thing as wasted time. What's your perspective?
Yeah, I think there's this is something that I've been thinking about a lot and that I've been struggling with, but I'm sort of coming to terms with. But I have been getting better at just enjoying time that isn't spent doing anything. Like if I'm just laying down or you know, sitting outside in the sun, I feel like that is quality time now, whereas before I might have not. I used to be really heavily career focused, which is kind of why I feel like I'm getting back late into the in the music game, I feel like. I mean, just personally, since I used to be in bands like right after high school and then sort of like not really taking either one of them as seriously as I'm taking Teens in Trouble now, but like I would make up excuses of like, well, I have to go to work or I have school and I can't do this. Like the band has to be put aside. So there was a point in time where I was working so much and trying to write songs at the same time, and anything that I was writing was just I hated because all my brain could think about was work. So like in 2017, I was like, well, maybe that's it for me. Like there's no music in my future or something like that. And it wasn't until the pandemic, and I think that's what sort of reshaped my idea of time and what wasted time is, when things slowed down and my work slowed down and I had space to breathe and, you know, figure like really pay attention to the things that I'm actually passionate about, like music. Like music has been just a constant in my life. And so, yeah, for me, wasting time now is just like if I find myself scrolling endlessly on social media, it's like, why did I do that? That provided exact like zero value. Whereas like sleeping or resting or like getting vitamin D outside, that's more like an improvement to my quality of life.
So in 2017, you made the conscious decision to quit music, basically, or not do music as much.
So when I started Teens in Trouble in 2015, it was when I was in between jobs. I got laid off from a job for the first time, and so instead of looking for another job right
What was that?
away,
What was that getting laid off? Because I got quote laid off. It was I either got laid off, fired, or I quit. It was a thing, man. What was it like? Was it a rumble, or was it like, oh, sorry, we gotta let you go? Like, what was it like?
oh, it was okay. So I was part of like a big tech layoff in the Bay Area. That's where I'm from, and I grew up in the Bay Area. And it was one of those companies that's notorious for just laying thousands of people off at any given time. And I'd only worked there for 3 months, and we just launched a product, and it supposedly was successful. So I'm like, cool, this is awesome. What's next? And then the next thing I knew, they brought a bunch of us into a room, and like I already knew because the room we walked into just had like boxes of Kleenex on tables. And
No.
so like, oh, okay, I see. And so they told us we were all laid off. We couldn't go back to our desks. We just had to like be escorted out by security, and like they called me a cab home, and some guy brought down a box of stuff that was on my desk, and then that was it. And so after like working nonstop right out of high school up until that point, I think it was like o over a decade now, from like high school to that point. I was just in shock, and like I think at first I was like, I don't know, I feel like I processed things pretty slowly. And so I was like, okay, well, this is happening. Okay, I'm going home now. And then like the next day, it started to sink in. I was like, oh my God, like what am I gonna do? So I didn't want to look for a job right away because after working so long, it's like, okay, maybe this is like a sign to like figure out what to do next. And so I started Teens in Trouble, wrote a song called Santa Monica during my like listen to Best Coast phase, and went back to school, finished my degree, and started doing some like freelance work on the side, which is what eventually made me start my own business that I'm doing now still. And like that's sort of been the best decision in my life because now that I've been able to like run my own business on my own terms, I can be much more flexible and like, okay, now I'm spending more time on music. And it took a while to get there, but it just made me more cognizant, I guess, of my like what I'm doing with my time and how like what work-life balance looks like.
You aren't you like a video game big shot or something? Like, aren't you a heavy hitter in video games or something like
A
that?
big shot. I don't know. I didn't hear that, but my primary career is a publicist in the games industry. And when the pandemic started, I also started doing some music PR just to help out some friends. And now I'm still doing that a little bit.
So, like, what's your favorite video games?
Lately I've been playing there's a game called Phasmophobia that's like a four-player ghost hunting game, and that's sort of been like my social interactions with friends lately because everyone's so busy lately and I've been on the road, and so like when everyone's home we'll get together and play this game Phasmophobia, which is you're going through different apartments and looking for clues, hunting for ghosts. And it's just such a hilarious game to play with friends because you could like, troll each other and like cause the ghost to haunt like your group and then maybe not let your team know ahead of time that you're doing that. And so someone, of course, dies and gets mad, but it's all fun.
I guess just one last video game question is why like there's been so many advances in video games, and video games are like so high tech right now. Why do you think the video game industry was never able to make a better game than 1989's Golden Axe? You know what I mean? Like there's no game that's better than Golden Axe. You know what I mean? Like you could be a barbarian, a fighter, or a dwarf, and you get to fight giants that laugh at you. You know what I mean? So
Oh my
M1 doesn't even
God.
know what Golden Axe is. Do you, M?
I do.
You do.
I do. All through old magazines.
Lizzie, have you ever played Golden Axe, the best game ever?
Have not. I'm missing out.
Podcast over. All right, let's see. I just got a few last questions for Lizzie, and then we'll get to some news. Let's see here. I got one more tech question for you, but it wraps into music too. A lot of bands are. This is my Newlywed Game, where like Bob Eubanks holds up a thing and like announces the question. A lot of bands, Lizzie, are now using AI with regards to album art and even music themselves. What was the metal band that just like did the new album? They redid an album cover as AI and it was terrible. Do you know which one I'm talking about? It was like some Polish band or something. Anyway, there was some hubbub. No. Some like Polish metal band used AI to make their album cover and everyone thought it looked terrible. I hate AI. I think it's terrible. But Lizzie, you are in the tech field. What's your opinion of AI and what's your opinion of AI in the arts? I guess the other example would be Paul McCartney claiming that they used AI to make like a new John Lennon song, which was kind of weird. Here's the back end of the listeners. So the Beatles just released a new song, and at first Paul was like, "We use
I like
AI
the Beatles in
the
quotes."
the Beatles. Paul, being my favorite and most hated Beatle at the same time, was saying my most favorite because he writes the best songs and most hated because he's kind of a phony and he dissed Mick of the Rolling Stones, for which I will never forgive him. But Paul said, we made a new Beatles song and we used AI to make John come to life again. And then everyone like really criticized him and he was like, what I meant is we just use AI to kind of get rid of some extra bass on the vocal tracks, which you can totally do without AI, so I don't believe him. And so anyway, Lizzie, what's your opinion of AI in general? I think it's the most evil thing in the world and should be destroyed before it destroys us, Terminator 2 style. But you know more about tech than I do, for sure. And what's your opinion of AI in the arts? Can they work together seamlessly, or is it the devil entering the kitchen, or whatever that phrase is?
Well, obviously, it's a very controversial topic. And I think a lot of the criticisms are about AI stealing other people's art, which I don't agree with. Being used as a tool, I can see where it could be beneficial. But I think the use cases still are just hard to determine right now, or I'm not really sure really where it can be helpful quite yet. But as far as just like, I don't know, I guess for instance, like the It's Up to Me video that we put together.
Was that maybe like, AI? Did I just totally diss you?
No, it was not. But I think if we did use AI, it probably would have not taken as long as it did to make it and not nearly as expensive. But, you know, we spent like a whole month filming for that and making our own effects and, you know, all for a 3-minute video that we put out and just like set out into the world. Could it have been way easier? Yes. Maybe if we used AI or something. But I also feel proud about like the work that we put together. So I feel like, you know, some people are using AI for like cheap shortcuts oftentimes, or like, yeah, I guess, yes, cheap shortcuts. So I don't know. I haven't experimented with AI myself, so I'm not really too knowledgeable in the topic, but yeah, it's still nice to do things yourself.
well said. Lizzie, we usually do about an hour, but honestly, can we push it to like an hour 10? Because there's a few more things I want to talk to you about before we hit the news. Do you have time or do you got to go?
Yeah, cool. I have time.
I didn't even know this. Lizzie, well, I mean, I knew she was in the Bay Area, but I didn't know that she used to go to like shows and stuff in like the 2010s and stuff in the Bay Area. We were probably at a lot of the same shows. Did you used to go to Club Avalon, like where they would have like shows there after it was a Chuck E.
Cheese? Is that in San Jose?
Yeah. So if the listeners don't know, there was this amazing club called Club Avalon that was like, it used to be a Chuck E. Cheese. Then they tried to make it like a super swanky nightclub, but it failed. So they started having like band nights there.
I remember when it was a nightclub. And I think that's why I've never really gone there. Well, one, like when I was in San Francisco, I didn't really go to San Jose too often. But I remember the Avalon being a nightclub, but I didn't know it turned into like a music venue.
So it was a nightclub, but then they started having shows. Like I saw KRS there like 10 times. I saw like the Misfits there, but then they turned it into like an 80s metal club, not like a throwback, like how do I phrase this? A has been 80s metal venue, like Y&T would play there, and like the bass player from Winger would play there and stuff. So, anyways, did you ever go to the bowling alley in camp, the Campbell bowling alley, when they would have shows at
Yeah,
the
my
bowling
old
alley?
band played Homestead Lanes, right? Is that the
Who'd you play
one?
with? Who'd you play with?
Who did we play with? There was that band. What's it called? What are they called?
Nar boots?
No, though we played with Gnar Boots before. The Phenomenauts played with us in
Oh yeah,
Homestead, and
I
then
might have been there. I might have been there
I
actually.
think it was like
I
Cinco de
saw the
Mayo or
Phenomauts.
something like that. And then there's a band from Portland called the Blood Types that played with us. They're awesome.
Did you ever see Gnar Boots? And what was your opinion of Gnar Boots? The listeners don't know Gnar Boots was the band. Adam Davis, who's now in Omnigon and was in Linkin 80, he was kind of the main guy. And also, there's a guy called Aaron who did the ska book. Defense, not Defense Ska. What's the book called?
In Defense of Ska.
In Defense of Ska. And for a little while, there was a guy called Bob Vielma who was in the band too. And
Yeah,
they
I
had
love
this group.
Bob.
Bob Vielma, one of the very best masterers of tracks. I don't know if he still does it, but I had him master the two Punk News mixtapes, and I couldn't believe the improvement in sound quality that he was able to do. At any rate, so Gnar Boots was this, like, at the time, Adam was very angry, so he made a group. The purpose was to annoy and scare the crowd, and I loved it. And like they would do the, like one time at a show, they stopped the show and they started yelling at the crowd saying someone stole their iPhone or something like that. And like at another show, it was basically like a noise set. And they would just do like these really random crazy things that I loved. Anyway, did you ever see Gnar Boots?
All of these things that you mentioned sound accurate because we played with them one time, and this was back in like 2012 or something like that with my old band, or maybe 2011, but it was a long time ago. But all I remember was that it was pure chaos. I almost feel like maybe one of them was hanging off the ceiling or something like that. It was just like all over the place, but they were so nice. They're really nice guys.
They're all real. They're all. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, when I saw them though, Bob wasn't in the group either anymore, or I don't know if he was just like not part of that show. But yeah, this was, I don't know if he had like already moved to LA or something.
Well, I'll let the listeners know some inside behind the scenes gossip because they're like 10 years old now. Bob decided to leave Gnar Boots because he wanted to do hip hop because he was doing hip hop for a while as
I
Barboza.
remember his
And the
hip
other.
hop phase.
He actually put out a mixtape that I really, really liked. It had Morgan of Hard Girls on it. It might still be on Bandcamp. It was called Grown Ass Man. And I actually like really enjoy it. And it has Jesse Michaels' one and only rap appearance as Dick Wizard, where and Jesse Michaels like raps over top of a Van Halen beat, which is freaking great. And so anyway, that was Gnar Boots. Just a couple last questions. Did you because Lizzie wants to talk about Bomb the Music and I'm sorry, Jeff Rosenstock when we do the news. Did you see Bomb the Music Industry at the Video Arcade in San Jose?
Oh, which arcade was this?
It was some like broken down, like really run down video arcade on like Campbell Avenue or something, and they had like shows there or something. And it was odd because it'd be all these little kids playing like little kid like video games, and then you they're like, I'm here for the show, So it had an odd vibe, you know what I mean? It's like,
No, I wasn't there. That sounds
okay, well.
amazing.
Second to last question. In the playlist video, Lizzie and a whole bunch of other people, including Lucy and Gwen of Dog Party, the amazing Dog Party, flip through, and Mike Park's in it as well as I think Sims is in it. Sims
Yeah,
Castro, is that his name?
Sim Castro, and he's also been playing guitar on with us on tour, so it's all been like part of the family, so to speak.
So in the very cool video, which is one of my favorite videos of the year, it's got people just like flipping through like records they like, and I'm gonna c contradict my thesis from the beginning. I was like, you can't really tell what a person is like by their music, but watching this video, I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, you know? So, anyways,
Cool.
Lizzie, what are like? It doesn't have to be your top, but like, what are 5 or 10 or 5 records that you super dig, either right now or in general?
I feel like a top constant that I cannot stop ever talking about is Pinkerton by Weezer. That's just like the album that shaped me as a teenager and like sort of been embedded in like all my songwriting, I feel like. Like I can't like that's a thing that I can't shake. Like I remember my friend letting me borrow his Pinkerton CD when I was 16 and listening to it and just like having my mind blown of just like, whoa, guitars can sound like that. I've been really into the OCs. I listened to them a lot over the pandemic and sort of through writing a lot of these more recent Teens in Trouble songs. So I feel like there's some sort of like real big fuzzy guitar element that sort of like creeps into some of the songs. Huge fan of Queen. Queen is like another like sort of influential band for me growing up. Sort of
I'm going to
recent
interrupt you,
stuff.
and I'm going to interrupt you and allow you time to think of one or two more if you'd like. With Queen, Brian May's always like, Queen's the best. We're great. And Queen is the best, and Queen's great. But I feel as though Brian May quite purposefully kind of downplays whatever internal conflict there was in Queen in order to preserve Queen the brand. Because by all accounts, Freddie Mercury, while a genius, was not always easy to get along with. Even Queen the movie, that documentary was like, we're Queen and we're pals. But I don't think that was the deal. You know what I mean? Are you fr and I'm not dissing Brian. Like Brian May's awesome. The crazy thing about Queen is any four of them could have been a lead singer. That's how good singers all four of
Yeah.
them are. Brian May, one of the greatest guitar players of all time, one of the greatest songwriters of all time. I'm just frustrated that once in a while, the same way I'm frustrated with Alice Cooper, who I think is the absolute greatest. I just once in a while I wish it'd be like, yeah, man, Freddie could be a real dick, or I could be a real dick. And they do the English thing where everyone's like, oh, he's a great chap. You know what I mean? Are you annoyed by that, or just me because I'm psycho? Like, what's your opinion on Brian May kind of like glossing over Queen discord? You know what I mean? I mean, and obviously there was
I
Queen
guess
discord.
I was just gonna say I will say you do have seem to have an encyclopedic knowledge of like a lot of these things. I haven't really gone that deep, and so I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm sure I did read some articles about Brian May's involvement with like how the movie would portray the band. So I'm not too surprised there, but I feel like there's just so much that my little brain can handle.
And more trivia time, what religion was Freddie
Yes.
Mercury and how was he buried?
He was Zoroastrian, I think, and
Correct. Oldest,
I don't know how he was buried.
the oldest monotheistic religion in the world, Freddie Mercury, Zoroastrian, buried in traditional Zoroastrian ceremony, FYI. People don't, I mean,
Nice. All right.
I think at this point people realize, but not like a lot of people think Freddie Mercury by citizenship was English, but he wasn't born in England. He's actually Farsi and was born in India.
Yeah, I remember
And
that.
like, and a
Yeah.
lot of people like don't kind of like he's got a really interesting background. You know what I mean? Anyways, Lizzie, one last cool album or band people should check out. Then I'm going to ask you one final question. Then we're going to play a Teens in Trouble track. Then we're going to hit some news, and we don't want to drag this out too long. But Lizzie is such a delight. She's got a lot of interesting points and interesting things to say. We just got to keep the flow going. Lizzie, one last cool album.
Oh, the new Spiritual Cramp album. I've been listening to that a lot. I'm so sad I
Another M
missed
more
them when
favorite.
they were in North Carolina just like a few weeks ago. So, but I think they'll be on the road again soon.
Let's be real. Bay Area friggin' rules. Bay, I mean, like I lived in the Bay Area for like 10 years, and then the music when I was there, the music scene was amazing. Then I moved back to Philly, and Philly is actually pretty cool now too. North Carolina has, I mean, listen, be real, be real. Does North Carolina match up to the Bay Area? Maybe it
It's
does. Maybe I
different.
don't know.
It's different. I will say that, like, when I moved here, and I moved here in 2019, I was surprised and pleased to see how vibrant and active the music community here was. And so, like, when I moved in April, like, found a band right away in August, and like, we started playing shows in December. And it was just like this. It was this post-punk band that I joined right before I started kicking Teens in Trouble stuff off again. But yeah, there's a lot of really great punk bands out here, and especially and a good amount of like diverse punk bands too. Like when we went on tour to Pooza Fest last May, I put together this like showcase for Asian American Heritage Month with like showcasing a bunch of different North Carolina bands, and it was just really cool to bring all those people together. But because we are in the South, there are also, you know, there's not like a ton of, I guess like there's a lot more like country bands and like not punk music. No, that's not true. That's not true. There's more. They have a really like vibrant hardcore scene here too. I know there's like tons of hardcore shows that happen around the Triangle area that are like always packed with college kids. I just haven't been to them yet.
Well, they have it. Lizzie, what's one thing you want people to take from the new album, or one thing you want people to check out on the new album? What's something on the new album you want people to focus on?
I'm excited for people to sort of take it all in. As I've been talking to people about the album over the last few weeks, like it really, I did really treat it like an album. So there's sort of like this flow that happens as you go through each track. Like I'm really excited with all the singles that have come out, but tying it all together with the 10 tracks, it's like it's sort of like painting the story of my last the last couple years of my life.
Well, there you have it. What's Mine? Out via Asian Man Records at the end of this month. Definitely check it out. I've definitely dug what I've heard so far. Let's play from the new album. You Don't Want to Mess with Me, the song where Lizzie warns her new beau about the damage from her old beau. And who knows? You have to listen to the song to see how that wraps up. And we'll be right. We're gonna play that track, You Don't Want to Mess with Me, by Teens in Trouble. Very cool name for a band as well. And then we're gonna hit the news. So we'll be right back.
Okay.
And we are back. And you missed it because I'm going to edit it out. But Lizzie just gave us an exclusive song where she was kind of humming. It was kind of like a Jeopardy kind of thing. It was pretty cool. Let's do the news. Lizzie's going to stick around. So anyway, here's the news. Circle Jerks in attendance. They're on tour today, and they just put out a 7-inch today. And on the seven inch, the Descendants covered the Circle Jerks. The Circle Jerks covered the Descendants. Three tracks by the Descendants, including Red Tape, the shortest, no, second shortest Circle Jerk song after Deny Everything. And the Circle Jerks covered two songs by the Descendants, including Hope, my favorite Descendants song. And I think that's great because I think the Circle Jerks are basically the best band ever, or Keith Morris is. And I think this is, well, I'll give my opinion in a second. But M. Moore, is this cool? Or is this just rehashing? Is it inspired, or is it just pro forma? What's your stance?
I think this was in the work. This has been in the works for quite a while because they have the. Well, yeah, they've done.
We broke the news,
shows.
Em. We broke the news through my detective work, where I sorted through Instagram and figured it out. We broke the news. But Em, so what's your opinion of this though?
I think it's cool because now there's another thing where they can use the like Milo Skankman mashup, which is the best.
Indeed.
Like mascot kind of art together.
And the art is really great.
It's the best. Like the bonus cup, like spilling and everything. It's just perfect. But yeah, the commercial for it was really funny too. It's all like VHS style, and then the Milo's running and Keith Morris is just kind of walking, and then they run like smush into each other, and then it's just the you got your Descendants and my Circle Jerks. No, you got your Circle Jerks and my Descendants, and it's like that Reese's peanut butter cup thing. So I thought it was really funny and really good. I don't think it's rehashing necessarily. I think it's just kind of fun because I do want to know what they sound like. I want to know how they would do each other's kind of styles, which kind of bums me out that this is a physical only thing and there's no digital component. So it's like if you don't have a way to play vinyl, you're kind of like screwed in a way. But yeah, all in all, I think it's cool. Lizzie, what are your thoughts on the Circle Jerks and Descendants split?
It's cool. I mean, like, I think I completely missed the Circle Jerks boat. It was just like, I yeah, no, I know. Kick me off the podcast right now.
Podcast. But I mean,
John is offended.
I know. I've been a huge Descendants fan. So I feel like this is one of those things that like, now get me into Circle Jerks. But yeah, I got to see Descendants for the first time at Fest last year. So that was like sort of wrapping my high school self to present self, which I feel like has been happening a lot lately.
I think this is super rad and super cool. Would I like a new Circle Jerks record? I'm not sure. We'll get into that in a second. But you know, usually I get annoyed when bands just do covers, like Kepi Ghouli, one of the absolute greatest, man. But like he's always putting out like, oh, here's me covering Tom Petty, here's me covering T-Rex, here's me covering the Beach Boys, here's me covering Modo, here's me covering Motorhead. It's like instead of putting out like 14 singles that are just you covering, maybe put out like one album. Like Kepi is so frustrating because he's so good, but he won't do what I want him to do. Whereas the Circle Jerks here are doing exactly what I want them to do, and that they're going on tour. This is not like some big thing, like, oh my God, it's a new Circle Jerks release. They're going on tour. It's kind of a fun memento. It's clever. Plus, the best part is not bullshit, and that is they don't just cover one song each. You kind of get like a whole EP on each side. So I think this is rad and cool. I'm thinking, would I want new Circle Jerk material, or would I want Keith to work on Off, or would I want Keith to even work on Flag? I don't know. And more, should we want new Circle Jerk stuff, or might it be bad, or would you rather see Keith put that towards Off and or Flag?
I don't think new Circle Jerks would be bad. I think it would be good. I think it's whatever Keith Morris wants to do is what he'll do. I think the movie is going to show up at some point, just out of the blue. I think that
the
might
Off
be the
movie
next
or the Circle Jerks movie.
The Off movie. Watermelon was Off, right?
Yeah, it was not. It's not called Watermelon anymore. Now it's called Free LSD.
Yeah, I think that'll be next, and then there'll be some music sometime.
Well, maybe Free LSD will show up at a show in Philadelphia in the future. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see. Lizzie, one more question about the circle jerks, and you can take a pass. When they first reunited, Keith basically said, "We hate each other, and we're just doing it for the money because I'm an old man, and isn't an old man entitled to a retirement fund? I'm an old man. Can't you give an old man a cup of water?" You know. So do you think the circle jerks still hate each other? I feel like they kind of don't. I kind of feel like they're getting along, to tell you the truth. Like I feel like it's gone in reverse. You know what I mean?
I guess I didn't know they hated each other.
Well, there you have it. Okay, let's see. Oh, here's a heavy topic. We're gonna talk about a heavy topic, and I promise I'm not gonna lead anybody into the crossfire or hot water, but we do have to address this for a related reason. Scal was going to play South by Southwest, and I'll admit, I love Scal when they first came around. Then I got a little down on Scal when everyone's like, "Scal's the best, Scal's the best." I'm like, "Well, if everyone likes Scal, I'm not gonna like Scal now." And then I
I know
heard the dance
the
remix, Psychic.
vibe.
I heard the dance remix of Psychic Dance Routine, which is amazing. And I'm like, "You know what, John? You're being a dick. Just because everyone else likes the band doesn't mean you can't like them." And the reason everyone likes Scal is because Scal's freaking awesome. So I'm totally
Yeah.
back on the Scal train. Anyways, so they were going to play
Welcome
South by
back.
Southwest. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. They're playing South by. They were going to play South by Southwest, and then literally at the last minute, like 12 hours or 10 hours before they were scheduled to play their first official South by Southwest show, they dropped off. And the reason they dropped off was because Scal is. And I'm not going to read the whole statement. Actually, I will. I will. Scal is no longer performing at any of our previously scheduled official South by Southwest showcases. We came to this decision in protest of the U.S. Army sponsorship of South by Southwest, as well as the involvement of Raytheon and some other companies who have direct ties to the manufacturing supplying of weapons used against Palestinians. And then they go on with that thing. So then they play the unofficial showcases. We here at the Punk News Podcast are not going to get into the Arab Israeli conflict. Because we're not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. But here's what we are going to touch with a 10-foot pole. And I kind of hate like making the comment I'm about to make because I feel like it's kind of cheesy, but it's true. So like in the comment section, people were beating up this band real bad, right? Like real bad. Like one person said, "What a bunch of phonies." Another person said, "So they are still playing shows at the festival being sponsored by the US military." Got it. Like they were beating them up real bad. And the fact of the matter was, if this was the Bouncing Souls, if this was Rancid, if this was Bad Religion, people would be like, "Yeah, that's cool." They won't say anything. The only reason Scal's getting beaten up so bad is because they've got a woman singing in front. And that's the truth. And I hate kind of like making that point because, like, oh, John's like trying to protect all women. No, I'm really not trying to make it about me. But I get so annoyed when like Danny Miller of Surfboard gets the same like reaction, and it really bums me out in that like not all the commenters and not even the majority of the commenters, but there are a significant amount of Punk News podcast commenters and in other websites too, where it's
Names will not
like
be named. No,
well, I mean
I'm
the point being is
kidding.
it's like when I went to shows in Philly 20 years ago, 15 years ago, there was like no women bands. Now, I would say it's almost 50-50 or at least 30-70, which is pretty cool. It's getting better. So you think, oh, you know, there's not really that much sexism in punk anymore, but there still totally is, especially if the woman, and we've discussed this before, Em, especially if the woman in the band isn't conforming to what these basement dwellers think the girl should be. Like if, and I don't want to, I guess, get too much into an explanation, but in the Punk News podcast, and you can disagree with me, but I used to have this joke, we used to have this theory that Danny Miller isn't going to be your girlfriend. The reason they hate Danny Miller is because they can't perceive her as their girlfriend. Whereas if the young lady on stage say, "Oh, I'd like to ask her out on a date," and maybe she would say yes, then they'll be like, then they like that band. But if the woman in the band isn't exactly what they want her to be, then they hate her, and I think that's what we're getting here because Kat. Not Kat Miller, Kat
Moss.
Moss, not Moss, Kat Moss. You know, she's pretty unique and she's pretty cool. And I think she's threatening to a lot of the basement dweller type commenters. And so I
Good.
think the only reason this was, well, definitely good. I think the only reason why this was such a lightning rod was because she is such a lightning rod to the basement dwellers. And I think she is threatening to them. And I think if this was the Bouncing Souls, this story would have came and went without much notice whatsoever. And more, agree or disagree, is this at least in part a big sexism issue?
I think in a way, yes. I also think people don't like seeing anybody take a hard stance on something. And I think that's especially true if it's not a man and not a white man saying that. So I think that has a lot to do with it. They're not
Yeah, I will
the,
say, like,
yeah.
having been on the internet for a very long time, that, there probably is some sexism there, but people are just going to be mad no matter what. So it could be just general, like, reply. Wait, the reply guy is not the right word here. It's not a reply
Yeah.
guy. It's a, what is that called? Now I'm forgetting the term,
Echo
but
chamber? What do you, I don't know what you get. Like, edgelord?
oh, keyboard warrior. That's what
Keyboard warrior.
it is. Yeah. Had to do the hand motion to do it.
Muscle
What's that
memory.
word again? Yeah. But yeah, I go ahead.
I do like the reply. Is that a term that exists? Because if it doesn't, like, reply guy. Oh, he's a
No,
reply guy.
it
Okay,
is.
you're
It's
like,
like, yeah, but
oh.
it's totally different. It's like the guy who will reply to like every single post that you put out. I think it's mostly like towards women. But yeah, it's just like it's, I don't know. All my like current internet terms are getting like mishmashed together. I'm like, wait, is it simping? Like, what's simping?
Need to like Urban Dictionary open all
Yeah, no, I
the
need to
time,
like
just
just have
double
it pasted
check.
on my wall, but can't keep up.
Moves so fast. There's like certain things where I'm like, okay, I know what this is, and then other ones where it's like, oh my God, I feel so old. I don't know what this person's saying. Am I that out of the loop? It took me
It's
too, yeah.
too
Sorry.
fast. Yeah.
It took me too long to figure out what Riz was.
Yeah,
I was just like,
Riz.
oh my God.
Think we lost John.
We did. It was all the internet slang. Sure, out his computer.
I understand. It
Sus.
breaks my brain on a daily basis.
Oh, 100%. Yeah,
Yeah.
we'll come back and it'll just be like we'll just be talking like binary code and
Yeah.
like it's all HTML from
I'll just
here.
be like downloaded from our brain.
Oh yeah. No, the internet is a double-sided sword or whatever. Like on one hand it's so nice 'cause you get to like
Double-edged sword. I
double-edged
think that's
sword.
a term.
Edges or sides.
Yeah. See, this is why I write
Yeah.
and I don't speak. I'm
Oh, welcome to the Punk News Podcast
Yeah.
Chaos. Yeah, we record at like 9 at night and everyone's so tired.
Are you all
So
on
we
the
have
East
a
Coast?
yeah. I think for yeah, actually we are all of
Okay,
us.
yeah. 9 p.m. crew.
Woo.
One other thing that I wanted to mention, and then we'll punch through the rest of the stories, is in the comments, especially these kind of stories, in the comments section, there's like totally like, well, like Trump dudes, but even beyond that, like at this point, being a Trump dude's pretty bad, And it's like I'm not saying you have to prescribe to any particular set of beliefs in punk rock or any particular political party, but like if you're a Trump dude or beyond Trump dude, it's like. Like that's, I hate to say something's not punk, but that is definitely not punk. And it's like, what do you think, like if you're pro Trump or like pro that whole thing or whatever, like what do you think punk is? You know what I mean? Like what do they like? Em, I would love to like interview these guys and like, what is it that you actually think punk rock is? You know what I mean?
Ooh, I would love to listen to
Yeah.
that episode, but I don't wish that on anybody.
Wait, interviewing them or listening to them? Well, I would love to interview. Like, I want to know who these creatures are. It's like what made you so like whacked out? You know what I mean? And what made you like hate women so much? And what made you hate like like you realize punk was formed by like Clash, Chumbawamba, even like the New York Dolls or the Stooges, who have got a certain vibe. It's like what do you think punk is? You know what? It's bizarre to me. I don't like it's so it just goes to show that any institution can be perverted to mean anything with enough coercion and change, if you will. You know what I mean? So yeah, no guys, no masters, as Amoebic says. Let's see here. Lizzie wanted to talk about a couple of things, which is kind of cool. Weezer is going on tour, and they're doing all of the Blue Album. Lizzie, are you excited for this?
Oh yeah, when I saw the email, I was just like, whoa. I did see the they did a Memories tour maybe like in 2010 where they did a whole set of the Blue Album and the whole set of Pinkerton, and both were like the best Weezer shows I've seen. But I mean, like, those two albums are obviously like one near and dear to my heart, but also maybe critically just like better than, it's their best albums. So do I want to go see this again? I was very excited to see that email, and then I looked at the ticket prices, and maybe I'm just gonna think about it a little more.
What are ticket prices running at?
Well, they're all like in arenas and stuff. So if you like, I wanted to be in the pit. And that's like $200 or more than $200. The seats, like sort of like the actual seats, I don't know. I think they range anywhere from, I know they're around $100 probably.
Lizzie, should I spend $75 to go see Bow Wow Wow? That's the real question.
What is it, a
It is a
big venue?
casino.
Oh, it is casino. I don't know. It does sound pretty steep. But if I'm all for experiences. You gotta do it.
And more, should I go pay $75 to see Bow Wow Wow and Men Without Hats?
Oh, you get two for the price of one. Yeah.
You get two for the
There
price of one.
you go. Go
Oh,
for
actually,
it.
and Lizzie, I should have met you, Lizzie. Keanu Reeves' band, Dog Star, is opening. Are you excited to? Would you be excited to see Keanu Reeves' band?
I think so. I haven't. I'm more for like the stories than like the actual show. Like, yeah, I saw
And more.
Keanu
Oh,
Reeves
sorry.
band.
Emor, would you go
Yes.
see Rivers with Keanu or not?
Ooh. I think so. I think it would be a really same thing, like interesting story. I know nothing about Dog Star. I just know Keanu Reeves is in it. So
Yeah,
I, yeah.
everyone says Keanu is in real life is actually the nicest guy.
That's what I heard
And
too. Yeah.
I know somebody that was like friends with him like when they were like 20s, and they said, yeah, he actually is like the nicest guy ever. So there you go. Also, Jeff Rosenstock is going on a European tour. Lizzie, aside from Jeff Rosenstock really walking the walk and really being pretty much as punk as it gets without being, cliche punk, is there anything you wanted to mention with regard to the European tour, or are you just excited that he's playing shows and
I'm
that
just
one of your
stoked for
bandmates busts
them.
on his
Like,
band?
yeah, I'm just stoked. I think the new album is super rad. I didn't even really listen to too much Jeff Rosenstock until I realized Mike was playing. Like, Mike Huguenot is really my whole connection to it. So when I found out he was playing with them, I started to really understand the whole Jeff Rosenstock phenomenon. But I got to see a couple of their shows when they're doing their West Coast leg of that tour. We saw them in Seattle when we were up there for our Teens in Trouble tour, West Coast tour in December. And that show was just so rad. And we got to meet him, and he was just so nice. And he said he liked our songs, so I thought that was cool.
Amazing.
And then I saw him again in San Francisco when I went back to visit my family.
Let's just blast through a couple ones, and then we're going to end on a sublime rant yet again, third week in a row. Nana Cherry is going to put out a memoir. It talks all about her birth. Her stepdad, rather, is of course the famous jazz musician Don Cherry, and her brother, of course, is Eagle Eye Cherry. But she was involved in the early punk scene with the Slits. But what's the other band she was in? Like Pop and that weird band with the guy from the pop group. It was called like Pop and Gash or whatever. She was in that band. Then she also made contributions to New Age Steppers before her massive hit, Buffalo Stance. And then she had, a bunch of stuff after that. Yet again, and I hate giving too much credence to the podcast, the comment section, but a lot of them are like, well, why is this punk? The answer is because she was in the friggin' Slits, dude, like the punkest band there is. So I'm psyched for the Nene Cherry memoir. I would definitely read it, and I'd be interested to see what her perspective is on the whole Slits thing, the whole On You Sound System thing. Being and actually this is kind of interesting. She became a pop star after she was a mom, which is really not that usual. So I'd be very interested to see what her perspective is with regards to that. Because when you're on the road all the time, it's kind of tough to have a couple of young kids, you know what I mean? And so that's
Oh,
interesting that
yeah.
she was able to juggle those two things. That's pretty unique for the late 80s, early 90s. So that'd be really interesting just to read about that. Also, let's see, what's the other story that I wanted to hit here before my sublime? Oh, here we go. Ergs, the re-releasing Dork Rock Cork Rod, the seminal pop punk masterpiece record from the early 2000s. The new version comes with two records. The first is the album remastered, and the second is remixed by, of course, Steve Albini. And of course, Mikey Erg is playing Summer Soiree 7 in Philly, Ramones Mania, with Joe Jack Talcum and Mikey Erg, the Joe Jack Talcum Band. It's going to be doing all Ramones' greatest hits, and Mikey Erg and the Mikey Erg Band is going to be doing all of Leave Home, and we've got two other Ramones-ish bands playing. So, anyways, I'm psyched for this. It's cool that this record is getting a deluxe, super deluxe reissue. M or Lizzie, I don't know if you, I mean, you, well, M is from up in Canada, Lizzie's from the West Coast. So, I don't know if you guys have any connection to the Ergs. They were like huge on the East Coast in like the early 2000s. Does this record mean anything to you too, or is this a band that you really haven't checked out that much?
Now, I haven't checked out, but I know the Ergs has been just like around. Like Mikey Erg was on Asian Man, so I've definitely like heard the name. I just have not checked out the Ergs.
Well, I just saw Mikey drum for Large and Grace last week, and it was a real cool show.
That's
So
awesome.
yeah, man,
Yeah.
I'm psyched for this. Last story, and it's a multi-part story. Jacob's Castle, which is Jacob, son of Brad of Sublime, has released a new track. The track is called Supervillain, and he has named his new album Enter the Castle. That's on April 12th. Meanwhile, and I think it is a coincidence, or it wasn't planned out. Of course, Jacob is now singing for Sublime, not Sublime with Rome. And of course, Sublime with Rome, which is going to last for another year, doesn't have any of the members of Sublime. He just has Rome and the trombone player from No Doubt, Gabriel McNair, and a couple of other people. And, I've gone back and forth. I love the first Jacob's Castle track, Time Traveler. I thought the next two were not that good. I thought this song was kind of good, but I feel like they're using production to compensate. Not quite their songwriting. That is, I think the song itself isn't quite there, and they just use a bunch of production tricks to make the song sound bigger and bolder than it actually is. I for some bizarre reason, I was like, yeah, man, Jacob's going to be great. I'm all in on Jacob, and they put out those last two singles, and I was really underwhelmed. So, M, first question, and then we'll get into the second thing, and I'll ask Lizzie too. What did you think of this track? Are you excited for the Jacob's Castle album, or is it all hype?
I didn't like this track. It was not my thing. The visuals in the video upset my eyes. Because they're like it
Well,
wasn't done properly.
they upset my eyes because they are a straight ripoff of old Sublime videos, and I'm like, I get like leaning into it a little bit, but it's like you're leaning into it like real. You're basically just taking the What I Got video and just refilming the shots. You know what I mean?
But yeah, just I wasn't a big fan of this song at all. And I don't know what the album's gonna be like, because everything that's been released so far has had a very different feel to it and a very different vibe to it. So it does seem like they're trying to, like they have a sampler and they're just trying to figure out like what's going to stick. So I think it's going to be a very eclectic album, to say the least.
Is it eclectic, or did they bring in a bunch of songwriters to help out because the core songwriter maybe wasn't quite up to the task of writing a full album?
Maybe that could be, if it's like, if the videos are the reality and it's, I'm just going to like hang out on the beach and get buried and like smoke, then maybe that would be, I don't know. Something's going to happen.
Lizzie, when you saw Jacob Noel buried up to his head in the sand and smoking, were you like, man, that guy looks cool? Or were you like,
well, I'm watching it right now. I mean, I didn't think that he looked cool, but there was a lot to look at. There's a lot happening in this video. Yeah, I feel like the VHS found footage style is back for sure.
So to close,
but
this
I
out,
also feel like I also feel like this. You know, when you're, I don't know if you're like, you do a lot of karaoke, but when you're like, you do a karaoke at a bar and they have like those videos in the background, it's just like whatever B-roll they put under the lyrics. I feel like this could be one of those.
That's a pretty harsh dish, I gotta say. We're gonna wrap this one up with yet another Sublime rant. In that, so I've been ranting about Sublime a lot recently, and well, I know why. It's because I love original Sublime. Lizzie, original Sublime, fan or not a fan?
I'm a fan.
Yeah, Sublime rules. So
yeah,
so
my band in high school would just play their songs during band practice.
Did you ever play them cool in front of like an audience?
No, we're terrible. So it's probably good that we did not.
So I love Sublime, and I always feel like even though Sublime, the band, is actually like pretty famous or super famous, they're not really appreciated for their depth of songwriting and the clever references they hide just throughout like every song, like homages to the Wailing Souls, homages to KRS-One, homages to Eazy-E, like homages to Cab Calloway, all these like really clever, like really wink, like deep winks that if Tom Waits or like a guy by voice, that people are like, oh, you know, they're a, or like Big Star, they'd be like, oh, they're a songwriter's band. But if Bradley Noel does it, they're like, oh, Brad, bro. Like, no, he's actually kind of like the best songwriter like around. At any rate, so that's why I feel so strongly about Sublime. I didn't go see Sublime with Rome at all, just because I thought it was kind of dumb.
That, you know, and, so and like that, I only listened to Sublime in high school and then sort of like fell off. And so when I heard about Sublime with Rome, I was so confused. Like I had no idea what that, if there was like a tribute band or if it was like the same band. But I mean, obviously I didn't like look too deeply, but I would see the name around. I'm like, what is that? Is that Sublime?
when Lizzie just said, so like, I thought you were about to say, I only listen to Sublime with Rome and I don't listen to Sublime. I thought that's what you were going to say. But anyways, so on the podcast, we've been speculating what's been happening behind the scenes. Well, we pretty much know the answer. Rolling Stone actually did an interview with Jacob Noel and an interview with Rome. And one of them is by Brian Hyatt. I forget who the other ones are. It might be Corey Groh or someone else. They're both pretty good interviews at Rolling Stone. And it pretty much says exactly what happened. And so, our speculation was basically right in that Rome learned about the Sublime reunion like everyone else did through the internet, which is kind of cold. Like no one called them and said, you know, Rome, it's been a cool 10 years, but now we're doing something else. Like, no one told them. And Rome, the reason Rome claims the reason he's doing these last year
there is too much Sublime.
Not enough Rome.
Not enough Rome. There needed to be more Rome. Rome hijacked the podcast.
Yeah.
We're talking.
We spoke ill of Rome.
So Bud Gass response, I'm feeling great. So we didn't deny the health concerns, but I want to say, oh, and in the Rome interview, Rome says, Listen, I understand that it has to end, and I understand that Jacob is kind of the best guy to do it if somebody's going to do it. I just wish we could have done a handing off the torch kind of thing, which actually that might have been kind of cool. Like they do one last show at Sublime with Rome, and then Rome like hands off the mic, and Jacob Noel comes up. That could have been pretty cool, and it could have left everyone being kind of happy. Now I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe they all hate each other. Maybe like they wouldn't want to do that, you know. And you and I always laugh at a certain band that you and I know that hates each other. That no one else knows, but not Mike Park knows they hate each other, and I asked him to call him out on the podcast, and he wouldn't. There's a certain band, and everyone thinks they're like pals because all their songs are about being pals, but they hate each other. Anyway, so maybe they hate each other behind the scenes. I was actually kind of like I like Jake. I'm like, oh, you know, his dad's dead, and you know what else is he going to do? But in the Jacob interview, he's like dissing on Rome like really bad. Like he's like saying like, ooh, well, I never saw Sublime with Rome. I just saw it as the guys in Sublime with some guy, which is true. But you don't need to say it. You know what I mean? And yeah. it's not like Rome called them up and said, let's start Sublime again. They obviously picked him. You know what I mean? And so he came off as kind of a dick instead of being like, yeah, man, Rome did his thing, and now I'm going to do my thing, and, like, that's how it's going to be. He was kind of, like, dissing Rome and saying, like, Rome didn't matter in the history of Sublime, which is sort of true, but that's not Rome's fault. That's Bud Gall and, to a lesser degree, Eric – no, I'm sorry, that's Eric Wilson's fault and, to a lesser degree, Bud Gall. I said Bud Gall had the health problems. I was wrong. It's Eric Wilson earlier on. Like, those are the guys that decided to do Sublime with Rome, not Rome. So I thought it made Jacob look kind of bad, like dissing on Rome. Like, Rome's a hired gun, man. It's like I mean, like, if I could sing, I can't. Well, actually, that brings up a great question now that I think about it. I'm dragging this out. I was about to say, if the Rolling Stones called me up and said, John Mick's not going to be there, do you want to come sing? I'd be like, hell yeah, except I probably wouldn't because I knew it would suck. You know what I mean? For example... Jack Terrycloth was asked to be the singer of the Misfits, little known fact. And more, of course, who's Jack Terrycloth?
Was the lead singer of World Inferno Friendship Society.
Lizzie, you know World Inferno at all?
No, but these pop quizzes are like making me anxious.
Lizzie, you have got to check out World Inferno, maybe the best.
Okay, I will. Jack, put it on a playlist. I'll listen to it.
Yeah.
Calling back to Lizzie's track playlist, the excellent single off her new album coming out at the end of the month, which is called
What's Mine, out March 29th on Asian Man Records.
Nice.
Lizzie, what's the new album called? I'm back. All right. Anyway, we're going to wrap up. Cool. I keep locking up. It's because I've got literally like 40 Discogs windows open right now. It's my own fault. And listen, I never said I was a pro. You know what I mean? So anyways, the point being is Jack Terrycloth said, no, I'm not going to sing for the Misfits because it will be terrible. And it would have been terrible. And I'm glad he didn't. And he went and formed World in Front of the best band ever. So what do we make from this? First of all, is this a good guy, bad guy situation? Is Rome the bad guy for singing for Sublime, or is Jacob the bad guy for dissing on Rome, who's just a hired gun? Also, Lizzie, let's see. If Weezer called up and they said, Lizzie, we want you to sing for Weezer because Rivers is being a jerk and he's out of the band, would you do it?
Like, ever?
Oh, well, you don't know. It's a Sublime scenario. Is Weezer with trouble?
See, like, no, I don't think I could do that. Like, for one song, sure. Like, I've seen, you know, like, Barry from Joyce Manor come up on stage with them for one song during their tour, or like, but the whole, you know, to fill in for, no, I cannot do that. I shan't do that.
How about they say, Lizzie, we want another guitar player. Will you get up and tour with us as our fifth, as our second guitar player?
Hell yeah. I'll do that. That's the thing, like, being a front person is super hard and daunting, and like, even like, this isn't the first time I fronted a band, but because I do feel closer to Teens in Trouble as my own project, it's terrifying.
Lizzie,
just what, like, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Lizzie was about to be super vulnerable and kind of had the high
No,
point of this
that's cool.
interview.
No, let's bring
And
it
I
back
was going to make a dumb
to
joke. I was about to make the dumbest joke, which I will make. Lizzie, what were you going to say? Then I'll make my dumb joke. Then I'll ask Em more questions. Then we'll go back to Lizzie and we'll wrap up the show. We're having a great time with Lizzie, but we want to drag it out. You know what I mean? You always want to leave them wanting more, you know, as they say. But Lizzie, so as you were saying before I interrupted with my dumb joke, fronting a band is super terrifying. So go
Yeah,
ahead.
it's hard and terrifying and vulnerable, and especially like with teens in trouble as this thing that I'm using as a way to really play around and figure out what my authentic like sound and songwriting style is, and just like putting it out there for people is always scary. Like I feel like I'm happy with all the songs that I've written and put out so far, and I'm super excited about this album. I'm like really proud of it, but as you're putting it out there for people to listen to and criticize, it's obviously there's a lot of people have a lot of like artists have to make that separation between like this is my art and take some feedback with a grain of salt, but it does feel like I'm sort of like putting out my progress or like stages of growth for people to track. And like sometimes that could just feel incredibly vulnerable. Like I'm not going to be an amazing singer or songwriter like right off the bat, but here's like my progress or my journey, like putting it out there. So it's cool in a way where it's like you are sort of tackling on that hardship because all for the love of art. But it's something that I'm also aware of, where I'm like, okay, maybe do I look at what people are posting, or do I just like keep doing my thing, or things like that.
Wait, so you are affected by criticism in like the comment section? Like if someone says this sucks or like
Not really.
don't stop. Okay.
Yeah, like I know it's out there. I just like I think it's easy for people to like sort of or like people being like easy for artists to sort of like check and see what people are posting. Like obviously you want people to be excited about it too, but you can't please everybody. And that's totally fine and something I've accepted. Like I've been in many situations where I've like had comments and it's like cool, just let that roll off. But it's still a part of doing anything where you're putting your work out there.
Well said. M and I are battle hardened from the comment section just
I'm
because
sure.
the nonstop barrage of hate.
Coming from the games industry too, like that is not new to me at all. Like games industry, music industry, so many parallels. So and as a Halo multiplayer player, I have definitely heard all the comments too.
Is video games worse than music? I feel like I mean, I don't know a whole lot about video games, but I feel like video games is way worse than music. Is that true or not true?
It could be pretty bad. Yeah. I mean, it was a lot worse back then. Like, I mean, I'm sure it is still, like, especially because I don't play as many multiplayer games as I did before. And when I do, it's usually with people I know now versus like when I was like 2005 or whatever, I was playing Halo multiplayer with like all these random people. And I'd always get comments like, "Are you a girl? Or are you a boy whose balls haven't dropped?" Something like that. And that's the tamest of it. So, yeah.
See, I feel like back then those dudes should have been psyched to play with girls because I feel like those guys have like no interaction with girls like whatsoever. You know what I mean?
No, it was not like that
Yeah. I mean, if they were smart, they'd be like, "Yeah, we're playing with some girls."
Like, what
I
are you
live alone in
doing
my
here?
mom's
Get back in the
basement.
kitchen.
Yeah, I know. Well, anyways,
Yeah.
to wrap this on up, M Moore. Whose side,
Yes.
and you have to pick a side. Whose
Oh,
side are you
good.
taking? Rome or Jacob? You
Oh.
can't say neither, Em. You have to pick. Whose side are you backing?
Can't
Jacob
pick.
or
I can't pick the greater good of Sublime.
I'll allow it. I'll allow it. Fair enough. So, anyways, second to last question, Lizzie, what would you do if the other people in Teens in Trouble fired you from Teens in Trouble and got Rome to sing your songs as Teens in Trouble with Rome? What would you do? What would you do, Lizzie?
Oh my God, that escalated so quickly. Like first I was reeling from the initial shock of them kicking me out of my own band to replace me with Rome. I'm now pissed off. Not even
Very
know
last. Oh,
Rome.
it well, well, like the thing was that he's like people always said he was a dick, but that might not be true. You know what I mean? Like just because it's said on the internet doesn't mean that it's true. And I gotta say, I bought into it. Like, yeah, Rome seems like a dick, but then in like the current interview, where he's like, you know what? I understand this is how it's got to be. And then Jacob's like, Rome sucks. No one cares about Rome. It's like true, but you don't have to say it. You know what I mean? Last question, Lizzie. Then I will let you go. You've been so kind hanging on the podcast with us for almost an hour and a half. It's been an extended episode,
Oh,
but listen, we had a lot of cool stuff to talk about. I know Lizzie is humoring us and thinking, when can I get off the phone with these creeps? But Lizzie, any last thing you want to talk about? Like anything you want the people to check out on the album again, or do you want them to go buy it, or anything you're really thinking about right now? What do you want the listeners to end tonight's episode with in their mind?
when is this episode out?
Tomorrow morning.
Okay, well, they're still available for pre-order, and I know Mike Park is sending them out early, so you may be getting it way before. Not way before, I mean, I guess it's out on the 29th, but people are probably getting their records from Asian Man Records early, as they are now shipping. yeah, again, I'm super excited about the album, and like, there's still so many songs that have not been heard yet that I'm super excited about. We just started playing some of them live. We just wrapped a little like week long, not really tour, it's like three shows, but we opened for our Expandits in Phoenix last week, and we started playing some of the new songs on the record that we haven't played before, and they're just so fun. And like the way I wrote them was because or like the way that I wrote them was to lean more towards like playing them live, which is different from the way I approached the EP, because when I wrote the EP, it was like the start of the pandemic, and like I wasn't really sure. I hadn't played live in a long time, and then now that we're playing shows again, I'm like that urge to want to rock out is ever so present, and yeah, these songs are just a lot of fun live.
Well, thank you, Lizzie of Teens in Trouble, for coming on the Punk News Podcast. New Teens in Trouble album. It's called What's Mine? Out via Asian Man Records. If you buy it online now, you'll probably get it pretty soon. Buy that. Buy the Kamen Rider reissue in the same bundle, and it'll be the raddest bundle you get of the year. Let's close this on out with one more Teens in Trouble track. It's Up to Me. We will see you next week. Lizzie, thank you for being on the show. This is
Thank you so
Teens in
much.
Trouble.
I built a fort of trash piled up around my room. It keeps out all the obligations I said I would take care of. My spine's cold.